The Springboks have made history. Our world champions have pulled off a 45-12 win over Wales, and what that means is that for the first time since 2013, the Boks have gone unbeaten on an end-of-year tour. As it stands, our world champions have won back-to-back World Cups. We also hold every trophy that is possibly available to us. The World Cup, as mentioned, as well as the Rugby Championship, the Freedom Cup, the Mandela Plate, and so on and so forth. You name it, we have it. Further to that, the Springboks have won 11 out of 13 in 2024, and we've also won 21 of our last 24 test matches. Some people are saying this is the best Springbok team in history. Others are going so far as to say that this is the greatest rugby team in the history of the sport. It's a great time to be a Springbok supporter. And on Saturday, let's be honest, an understrength Wales, and when I say understrength, I'm not talking about a second string side, I'm talking about a team that is struggling, a team that hasn't won a match all year and was facing 12 defeats in a row, they were never really going to challenge us. And as soon as the sixth minute, the Springboks were in front in Cardiff. A nice Bok attack down the line. We got to a breakdown. And then Jaden Hendrikse at scrum half on this occasion played a very clever short pass to Franco Mostert, who went straight through the gap unchallenged. He went over and scored South Africa in the lead. It was converted by Jaden's brother Jordan. Nice to see the brothers playing and the halfback positions in this match. I can't recall the time that has happened for the Springboks. In fact, I can't think of any other occasion. The closest that we would come is maybe something like Bismarck and Yanni Duplessis playing together in the front row. So obviously a very proud moment for the Hendrikse family. 3 minutes later, it was 12-0 thanks to this Eben Etzebeth try. The Boks counter-rucked and the ball found its way to Kurt Lee Arendse, who is an outstanding finisher, as you would know. He didn't finish here, but he did create the space for Eben Etzebeth, who actually started that 1-2 with the winger.
Cutting loose early in Cardiff.
Beautiful stuff.
Two locks are on the board.
In the 19th minute, from a line-out, the ball went down the line again, and this time Arendse would have his try, beating three defenders, and how about that sidestep? Jordan converted for 19-0, and frankly, at that point, Wales were lucky to have nil.
South Africa's third.
But credit to the hosts. I know that in my preview video, I mentioned things like this being the worst Welsh team that we've ever seen. They haven't won a match all year. In fact, they haven't won a match since September last year in the pool stage at the Rugby World Cup. That's how bad this losing streak has been for the Welsh. They're a proud rugby nation, and there was a fear that maybe they were going to just roll over here. But they didn't. They gave it everything they had. To their credit, as I say, I thought their captain, Dewey Lake, had an outstanding match, as did Jack Morgan, a man who I believe is Wales' only truly world-class player right now. The two of them put in warrior performances for the Welsh, and I think that if you are watching this as a Wales supporter, you can feel very proud of the effort put in, especially by those two men. But not just them, actually. Because Blair Murray pulled off something quite extraordinary, in my opinion, in the 28th minute, just to show that even if they felt that they might not be able to match the Springboks in terms of power and the final score, they certainly were not going to die wondering. So there was a high ball. It was between Arendse and Murray. That was the contestable. The ball actually spilt its way straight into the hands of Apalele Fassie, who was on his way to the try line. Murray was able to recover from his positioning alongside Arendse to get back, wrap his arms around Fassie, and actually prevent our fullback from putting downward pressure on the ball on the other side of the try line. And I just thought that there alone epitomized the courage and the strength and the willpower and the fight that Wales brought to this match. And that is something that is worth applauding. But in the 34th minute, we would have our next try, our fourth of the half, in fact. This time, our scrum was at its ferocious best. We won a penalty, and thanks to a quick take, we disrupted the Welsh defence quickly enough. Jasper Visser very nearly making his way over the try line. I'm not actually entirely sure how they were able to stop him, but the man who would go over for the try was Alrich Lowe. Jordan converted to make it 26-0, and the Welsh, as I just mentioned, who did not give up, would have their try on the stroke of halftime. So eventually, they finally managed to make their way into the Springbok 22. They won themselves a penalty, and credit to them, they decided, you know what, we're 26-0 down, we're not going to go for the 3 points, we're going to kick for touch, and that's exactly what they did. It actually happened twice that way, and on the second occasion, they were able to get their try, moving the ball down the line. It found its way to Rio Dyer, a speedy and pacey winger, and quite wily as it turns out as well. He managed to slalom his way past a couple of Bok defenders, and Wales had their try. 26-5 at halftime. And just before I tell you about what went down in the second half, I'd like to tell you a little bit right now about my brand new book that is out. It's called How to Become a Sports Journalist. It's the ultimate guide for any high school kid or student who aspires to one day become a sports journalist. I've been doing this job for 20 years, and there's a lot of things I wish I had been told back in the day. Well, you know what? I've gathered all of my thoughts, all my tips, all my advice, and put it into this book. It's currently available on Amazon. If you're a mid-career journalist, you might fancy this book as a good guide as well. And you might say to me, Pete, I'm not a journalist. I'm not a sports journalist. Well, you know what I'd say to you? This might make the perfect Christmas present to someone you know who is or wants to become a sports journalist. Now, the truth is that the second half was nowhere near as exciting as the first. I think that there are a few factors for that. I would say that the presence of the bomb squad, ironically. So what happened was in the 42nd minute, Cameron Hunnicombe came on for his Springbok debut, replacing Alrich Lowe. By the 45th minute, we had a brand new front row on the field. Now, a lot of people think, okay, the bomb squad comes on and immediately things are set alight. That's not exactly how it works, because despite them being outstanding players and quite frankly, striking the fear of God into our opponents, the reality is that when they come on, they still need one or two phases of play to get into it, if you know what I mean. Whereas the opposition, they are warm, they've been playing for 40, 45 minutes, so you don't immediately take control, or at least not necessarily immediately. And I thought that, coupled with my concern before the match even started earlier in the week, that if you looked at our front row, we had Thomas du Toit. Remember, he came in for Oxenchair. We had Johan Grobbelaar and we had Wilco Lowe. That is a front row that has never played together before at test level. Okay, we did have Franco Mostert and Eben Etzebet in the second row, right? An experienced group of players. They've played together before, but not as a tight five with that front row. And then we had Sia Alrich and Jasper Visser as the loose trio. Again, they've played together before, but as a pack, they've never played together. And then the Hendrikse brothers, they've never played a test match together before. Now, you might say to me, oh, Pete, they've played plenty of test matches in their backyard growing up. Yes, I grant you that that is the case. But my point being that from 1 to 10, in terms of combinations, these guys have never played a test match together before, and I was concerned that there may just be a lack of cohesion. And the irony is that once the bomb squad came on, that's when we looked a little bit disjointed and we had a bit of a scrappy second half. However, having said that, in the 46th minute, we did have our next try. It was Apelele Fassi who would not be denied on this occasion. Arendse again managing to make space to put Fassi through. Kirtley was in man of the match territory for me at that stage, but I'll tell you at the end of the episode who my actual man of the match was. 31-5.
Absolutely stellar. This time Kirtley Arendse finding a hole and Fassi profiting.
8 minutes later, Gerard Steenkamp was over the line. This guy, I don't know about you, but every time I watch him, it's as if he becomes stronger. It's scary, isn't it? I don't know, man. I just think our rugby's in such an exciting place right now. As I say, Gerard Steenkamp, remember Oxenchair is usually the starter. Then you factor in that Thomas du Toit can play loose head as well as tight head. Man, if you're the All Blacks or England or Ireland, I don't know how exactly you are going to stop South Africa in the coming years. 2027, I'm not saying that we will win the World Cup. There's all sorts of factors that can come into play between now and then. But my goodness, we are looking very good indeed. Steenkamp scoring the try on this occasion. That was our sixth of the day. It was from a scrum penalty. It was a tap and go, a couple of picks and drives, and then eventually Steenkamp managed to barge his way over the line. And then, as I say, the second half, it almost petered out a little bit. Again, largely in part to, I think on our part, a lack of cohesion. And I don't know, maybe there could have been an element of, it's been a long year, the match is in the bag, let's take our foot off the pedal a little bit, even if it's a subconscious thing. And then you couple that with the fact that Wales were giving it everything they got. They did not lie down and they kept going. And I think that that made the match at least competitive, not necessarily in terms of the scoreline, but in the second half, it wasn't a runaway. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like a 75-0 kind of situation, which quite frankly, nobody wanted to see. But South Africa would go and score again just before the end of the match, 4 minutes from time. In fact, Andre Pollard this time, he had come on and he was playing inside centre here. And I thought that that was actually quite clever. I'm not sure why Damian Delenda actually went off the field. I didn't pick up if there was an injury or not. I hope not. But nevertheless, what happened was you kept Hendrikse at fly half and now he has the benefit of Pollard and all his experience at inside centre. I think playing like that must have done wonders for Jordan and the development of his game. And then don't forget, not only he was playing with his brother, but Kobus Reinach came onto the field in the second half, quite early actually. So now you got Jordan, who's inexperienced at test level, but he's got Kobus Reinach at 9 and you've got Andre Pollard at 12. What a wonderful situation for him to be in. That is what I call in-service training. Now, Pollard managed to make a good break. It took two Welshmen to bring him down, in fact, in what I thought was just brilliant. As he went to ground, he popped the ball up with one hand to Kobus Reinach, who then managed to get the ball to Jordan Hendrikse, who went over for his try. He converted it as well, and it was 45-5. At that stage, that would have been South Africa's biggest win over Wales in Cardiff. Previously, 52-16 was the record score. Now, obviously, 52 is more than 45, but 52-16 is a 36-point gap, 45-5 being a 40-point gap. But you know what? Those proud Welshmen, they had something to say about it. And right at the end, they kept going. It was relentless on their part. They managed to breach our defense courtesy of Jason Botham. The try was converted, and the final score was 45-12 to the world champions. Now, I feel like I've waxed lyrical a little bit here about Wales, but let's just put a few things into context. They are one of the proudest rugby nations in the world. They're one of the most famous rugby nations in the world. If you are a rugby fan anywhere, you know about Wales. Your father, your grandfather, they would have told you about men like Gareth Edwards, JPR Williams, Barry John. Me, I would tell you about the guys that I grew up watching. I'm thinking of Yian Evans. I'm thinking of Neil Jenkins. And then perhaps the more recent era, where you had men like Sam Warburton and Alan Wynne-Jones, warriors, not only of Welsh rugby, but of world rugby. And to see them where they are, it's actually very, very sad. I understand that there are internal problems within Welsh rugby. You know all about South African rugby and the internal squabbling that we've had ever since the game pretty much went professional and probably even before that. Wales have got similar problems going. Again, where South Africa have got a problem with so-called provincialism, they've got a problem with what they call their regions. And that is kind of where there's a bit of a breakdown. It could be communication, it could be cooperation. I don't pretend to be an expert on Welsh rugby, but they do have problems. And then don't forget that they've got a small population as well. So it's not like South Africa's got 60 million people. Wales do not have 60 million, nowhere near that, okay? And you think about that, and actually, in many ways, you could say that when it comes to punching above your weight, Wales might actually be the best rugby country in the world. You think about that for a moment. I would say that if not them, I mean, you could say New Zealand, right? Given their population, I think it's about 5 million. And to have done what they've done, then you could say the All Blacks are the best rugby nation ever. What about Fiji? And they've got a tiny population and they've got to the Rugby World Cup quarterfinals 3 times. It's unbelievable. So those kind of things suddenly become part of the conversation. Wales, they haven't won since September last year. They've lost 12 tests in a row. The last time something like that happened was 1937. But you know what? I watched Lake. I watched Morgan, I watched Murray, and quite frankly, everybody else. Everybody put in a shift today. And you know what? If they continue doing that, and Warren Gatland, love him or not, is a very, very good coach. He's done it all before. He really has, except winning the World Cup, of course. But I'm confident that they can turn things around. And I think we want to see that. Nobody really wants to see Wales being, quite frankly, dreadful. And that is kind of what we're seeing at the moment. But based on the effort that they put in this defeat, I'm confident that they can turn things around. But it will take time. So let's see what happens. But you think about the British and Irish Lions tour to Australia next year. How many Welshmen can we honestly say can confidently go home after this match and pack their bags for that tour? Morgan? He's probably the only one, I think, who can confidently go home and pack his bags, knowing that he is going to Australia next year. Having said all of that, let's talk about our world champions. I mentioned it at the beginning of the video. I'm going to rehash that for you again because I feel like we need to talk about this. There are some historic things going on here. The last time the Springboks went on an end-of-year tour and were unbeaten was in 2013. It's been 11 long years since we did that. We've set the record straight. We hadn't won the Rugby Championship since 2019. It had been 5 years. And before that, it had been 10 years. So it was lovely to win the Rugby Championship this year. And in doing so, we also netted the Freedom Cup, the Mandela Cup, or the Mandela Plate rather. And don't forget, at the beginning of the year, we retained the Qatar Airways Cup, which I think looks like it's going to become an annual thing, probably at Twickenham. It's great. I love it. And let us keep hold of that trophy forevermore. And of course, the big one, the Webb Ellis Cup, is firmly in our trophy cabinet, and it has been since 2019. So double world champions, we've got every accolade we could possibly win. It's in our trophy cabinet. We're the number one team in the world. We've won 11 out of 13 in 2024, and we've won 21 of our last 24. Many congratulations to Dr. Russie Erasmus and his coaching staff and our world champion Springboks. We love them. I did promise you that I would tell you who my man of the match is for this match. And you know what? Kirtley Arendse, I thought he had a great game. I personally thought Siya Kolisi had a wonderful game. I really liked what I saw from Siya in this match, and I was very, very tempted to go with Siya. But if I'm honest, I couldn't ultimately overlook the man of the match as selected by the TV guys as well. So I ended up agreeing with him. I think that's 2 weeks in a row now. Not always the case. My man of the match, Franco Mostert. Sos. I look forward to your company next time.